from the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University, this is Writer's Talk. I'm Doug Dangler. Tina Galley graduated from The Ohio State University with a degree in English. Among the many projects that she completed during her coursework was a study of the feature film Shutter Island. This project was accepted by the OSU Denman Forum, which is a showcase of over 500 OSU students discussing their academic projects. Her advisor on this project is here and was David Herman from the OSU English Department. So welcome to Writer's Talk.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thanks.
Now, Dina, you took a class, as we said, in narrative theory with Professor Herman. What is narrative theory?
Well, when I first signed up for the class, I thought we were just going to be talking about plot, basically, just from my idea of what narrative is. And then we got into the class, and it was just this whole field that I've never heard of before, and it was so interesting, and basically just looks at everything connected to narrative, whether it's the characters and the plot, like I had originally thought, or anything else that builds upon the narrative. So it was just really interesting to find out this whole field.
Okay. So is there a related thing called setting theory where it's different from... No, but, so how does it impact readers or writers' narrative theory? What is its push going for?
I could take a stab and Dina could follow up. I mean, actually, I've had creative writing students take the class and they've remarked that attending to the nuts and bolts of stories, how they're put together, really helps them. So I think it has a bearing on the production or creation of stories. And on the interpretation side, which is more what Dina was working on and we were working on in the class, knowing how narratives are put together sort of enhances your appreciation of the power and impact of a story, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I've just from having taken the class, now every novel or movie that I see or any just narrative that I come across, it's just easier to understand and take apart and just better understand what we're seeing, and especially from the work that someone did creating the narrative, you can kind of examine it better and what they actually did rather than just viewing it from more of a bird's eye view.
Okay. So it goes beyond plot to include characters and setting and all this kind of thing. And tell me about some of the hallmarks of, say, what you're seeing. You're talking about seeing narrative everywhere now, it seems like. Tell me about the things that you see in the class and talk to the people about in the class. What are some of the big hallmarks of narrative theory or this kind of storytelling concentration on?
Well, maybe talking a little bit about the way the class is organized might help. We started with a description of the kind of basic elements of stories like character and setting and plot. And then we moved to the notion of narrative world making and how stories evoke worlds or invite us to inhabit imaginatively worlds. Then we moved from there to questions of truth and fiction and how stories can purport to be truthful or not if it's a fictional account. And then from there we moved to a final unit on postmodernism and identity and complex, thorny ethical issues pertaining to narrative. So really the study of narrative runs that whole gamut from the fine-grained details of how stories are constructed to the worlds that they evoke to questions of truth and fiction to ethics and value. So I think it gives you a set of tools to evaluate one of the most important cultural phenomena that we have, which is stories and storytelling.
Okay. Now, your final project for this class was on Shutter Island, the motion picture. It's got Leonardo DiCaprio and others. But actually, in this film, that's very much true.
Yeah.
You know, he is the central character around which everybody else is in ways that get revealed at the end, sort of acting and creating story. So, you know, what did you analyze from this without giving, I suppose, too much of it away? But it's an older film now. You can give away the ending and whatever you want. Who cares?
No longer a spoiler.
No.
So tell me about how narrative theory led you to write about this particular novel, book, movie, in a way that was different from how you might have approached it originally.
Well, once we had the prompt for the final project, it really encompassed everything that we talked about, taking a few things from each of the different sections. And so I had originally been thinking about using a different movie for the project, and it was going to be fine. And I, you know, was working out my ideas. And then I saw Shutter Island just in the theater, and it was just everything that we were seeing. Again, narrative was just everywhere, and all these big terms that we had a dictionary of narratology, and all the big terms were coming out, and I thought this is just going to be perfect because of the character, you know, whether he's reliable or not, the going back to his either delusions or events that have happened to him in the past. And there was just like so many layers and different characters and all the different things that were happening that it just really had to do with what we were talking about in class, and even brought in the ideas of identity and ethics. And so once I saw the movie, I was like, this is what I'm doing. So.
Okay. And you brought a little section that you were going to share with us. And you mentioned at the beginning that you, as you went through, well, before we started taping, you read it and thought, oh, I'm going to have to change this to read it aloud, which is an interesting writerly aspect, because there's writing for the page and writing for the ear. So now you've had that experience, and we'll come back to transmedial in a little bit. But so let's hear the part that you rewrote for the ear.
Okay. All right. When exploring a narrative, its basic elements are significant to the initial analysis. In H. Porter Abbott's The Cambridge Introduction to Narrative, Abbott defines narrative using what he refers to as the bare minimum. The two most basic parts of narrative, which he discusses, are story and discourse, which are what Russian formalists often refer to as fabula and sujet. The story is the single event or the sequence of events within the narrative, while the discourse refers to the way those events are represented by the narrative. Shutter Island is the type of narrative that benefits from and highlights the distinction of story versus discourse within a narrative. When examining Shutter Island, the two terms can be explained as the story, made up of Andrew's actions to avoid reality, where the events are the subconscious action he takes during the experimental role play and the actions of those around him as they help him through the role play. The discourse, however, is the way that these events are presented. In this particular narrative, the story is mediated in such a way through temporal sequencing, Teddy's interpretation of events, and film editing, that the discourse of the narrative creates an alternate reality that is only exposed at the end. This discourse represents the story in a way that allows the audience to experience the shock of reality along with the character and be able to better connect what he is feeling when the facts come to light. The discourse is also affected by supplementary events, even though they are seen as not necessary for the story, according to Abbott. They accomplish a lot of in terms of discourse. All of the extra interactions with the Asheville staff and other patients within the film, as well as the events that are later realized to be hallucinations and misinterpretations, are there to add to the main events within the story. The way they are represented through the discourse of the narrative first helps complicate the narrative and add to the narrativity, and then ends up enhancing the shock which the character and the audience feel during the denouement. Another interesting aspect within the core of narrative, also highlighted by Abbott, is the rhetoric of narrative. In this section, Abbott focuses on the ideas of normalization and master plot. And within Shutter Island, these two topics blend well in support of each other. Abbott explains that the rhetoric of narrative is its power, and that its power comes from the normalization and master plot that occur within the narrative, aspects of the narrative that the author may not even be able to control. the normalizing events occur because of the audience's unwillingness to tolerate the condition of unknowing, which is a statement by Abbott. As the narrative continues to unfold, the audience creates a sense of coherence by understanding the events within the context of their own world, or labeling something as paraleptic and giving it meaning from that perspective. The mechanism of normalization is interesting because of its subconscious rationalization process. The film teases this process by later giving a secondary explanation for all of the events and making the audience question its adherence to a master plot. The master plot that the audience was following was that of a hero with his own faults and tragedies, like all heroes, coming to save the day in a cruel and corrupt world. In fact, the audience is so used to this master plot that when one of the patients reveals to Teddy that what's taking place is experimental role play, the audience normalizes the statement by writing the comment off as unreliable information from an unstable individual, rather than readjusting the master plot that is in their minds. This example shows the power of rhetoric, which Abbott refers to, as well as highlights the ways in which it can be used to impact the narrative and the perception of the audience. Okay.
So what it seems like you're getting there is notions of what a story is, or how we interpret a story, or the kinds of formula that we've seen before. Mm-hmm. And that when you get something that violates it at the end of the story, like it does here, that makes it the narrative stand out, particularly for you and for narratology. Is that kind of what you're getting at with there?
I mean, it definitely gives it more narrativity, which is the interesting part of narrative.
It reminds me of The Sixth Sense, mm-hmm. where there was that big surprise at the end, mm-hmm. and that really turned things. Does narratology, this sort of interest, work particularly well for movies in which they have endings that go against the master plot, or the idea of here's a particular genre convention or a kind of movie that we're used to seeing, where they have the hero, and then that turns out to be something different at the end. Is that a fair statement about this kind of thing? Or
sure. I mean, I think that the nice thing about narratology or narrative theory is that it allows you to accommodate that possibility among a whole range of other possibilities. Mm-hmm. So when you make that initial division that Dina was talking about between story and discourse, the what of the story versus the way it's presented, you can talk about stories that have surprise endings versus stories that unfold unproblematically in a chronological mm-hmm. order. You can handle both sets of cases in one single comprehensive framework.
Okay. Now, after the class was over, he asked you to, if you wanted to rework the paper into a presentation for the Denman,
right.
which is an OSU tradition.
Right.
So tell me about this, going to this. First, tell me what it is, and then how your writing got you there.
Okay, so the Denman is the undergraduate research forum at OSU, and a lot of the papers presented there are usually people's honors thesis, or that's just a very common use for that. But basically any paper or project can be presented as long as the abstract is accepted. And there's just such a variety, like not only scientific research, but qualitative research, or something like my project, or there were some really interesting projects from people in the School of Music or art. So it's not just a scientific inquiry. So.
And then they come around to ask questions of you. The judges come by, and they have a rubric. They have some way of grading that.
Right.
And they come by, and then people win. People don't win.
Yes.
people go to Pizza Hut afterwards or whatever you do. So tell me about the experience of that. You take a paper like this that you've written for basically one mm-hmm. audience. A lot of times undergraduates will, and even graduate students, we write towards the audience that we think it's going to be, you know, the professor,
right?
The instructor. But here you've got a different kind of audience. Did that change your writing during this? Just like you said today, you had to sit down and write it to change, do some revisions for the year. How did that change the way that you presented the project? It moves from this paper into something else.
Definitely had to change some things. First of all, just the structure of the paper was more based on the sections of the class. Well, here we wanted to find a focus, and we picked transmedial narratology. So,
which is
narrative within other medias besides spoken storytelling and written. And also, you know, when I'm writing a paper for Dr. Herman, I don't need to explain the terminology.
As you just did for this. Okay.
But when we were putting the poster together, you know, we were conscious of, you know, not having too much jargon and being more clear.
You're listening to Writer's Talk from the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University. Today, I'm talking to former OSU undergraduate Dina Galley and her teacher and advisor David Herman about the academic subject area known as narrative theory. You can learn more about narrative theory and find links to Project Narrative on our website at www.writerstalk.org. Writer's Talk is a co-production of the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing and the Ohio Channel, where you can watch videos of our interviews at www.ohiochannel.org. Now back to our interview and our discussion of Dina's poster about Shutter Island for the OSU Denman Forum.
And when you put together something like that, you've also got to be aware of when you take something like a movie, it's very different to represent a movie, I think, than to represent a novel. You can quote the bits out of a novel that you want, but in a movie, you can't put a quote on screen. You can show some stills and things like that. But it seems like that must enter into it when you're doing these different sorts of media, whether you're working with a movie. It's always struck me as so difficult to write about a movie that we're maybe moving into a time where writers can say, but wait, you know, here's the description. And embed into that, since you're watching it on a screen, here's the part that I'm talking about. Here's Teddy in this particular moment, and then you can watch that. But does that take away from then the way that you would describe it? Because you, one of the things that I've always thought is part of the great thing about writing about movies is it forces you to describe and pick out the things that you want. And did that enter into it for you when you had to present it in a different way?
I think that narrative theory gives you more terms and ideas to think about. I can't imagine not now going back and trying to explain the movie. I just feel like it would be very basic. Whereas once you have the dictionary and just the terms, you're just able to talk about it in such a deeper level. Mm-hmm. So I almost found it easier. It was just a matter of making it understandable for the audience that was going to be at the Denman.
So now you carry the dictionary with you when you go to parties and things like this, and you have pulled up. Well, it's one of the dangers, right, of getting into a certain kind of education, in that things like this that you might want to go to a party, and if there were people there who liked the movie as well, they probably have very different reasons for it.
Right.
Has this been a problem for you, say, when you go to parties? You're like, I can't talk about that movie without sliding into this genre, these terminology.
Yeah, and you know, narrative theory is notorious for multiplying terms and having contrasting sets of terms, depending on the theorist and the approach. Mm-hmm. Another complexity is that if you think about narrative and how it operates across different domains of culture and different contexts, different settings, you have people coming from different fields who might be interested in stories, and each field has its own set of terms. So the problem of terminology and finding some way of talking about or characterizing narrative in sufficiently complex terms that don't prove off-putting for people from different areas, it's really a challenge in the field.
Do either of you do creative writing, where you do fiction, and you're smiling, so has this impacted you at all, if you have these interests?
I love creative writing. I feel any time that I even try, I'm like just thinking of all the better stuff out there, and I'm like, oh, I can't do it.
So it's been helpful. His class has really been helpful in getting you where you want to go. Right. Do you do creative writing as well?
I do a little bit of experimentation, but there's actually a novelist at Brown University who heads up the creative writing program there, who is a published novelist who writes kind of experimental fiction and works in narrative theory. And I think he finds that crossover really productive. So he experiments with narrative structures and effects in ways that narrative theorists describe in his own fiction.
So, I'm always curious when... maybe a little concerned when somebody says experiments with it. Because when you talk about writing, you're writing a lot of the stuff that, you know, makes the most sense is obviously things that conform to a certain kind of narrative, things that have a certain kind of story, like the hero going into, in this case, a mental asylum and trying to solve this mystery. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to detach at the end, mm-hmm. or sort of halfway through what's going on. And that's always my interest, is how far can you go with that? I remember sitting in the theater watching Pulp Fiction the first time I saw it, and people were, you know, wait a minute, he's dead. What is he doing here? You know, that part of it, because it's nonlinear, and it was, right. I think, one of the first ones I'd seen like that. And that must also figure in heavily to narratology, because the people begin splintering, shattering, experimenting, and...
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, what narrative theory allows you to do is sort of identify what conventions go along with what genre, so that when they're getting mixed or played with, you can better appreciate the sort of hybridity or creative interplay that, mm-hmm. that is happening.
So. Okay. Who are some of your favorite authors to apply this to? What, this is Dennis Lehane, is that right?
Or, yeah.
Okay. So who else do you work on?
Well, I work on a range of authors and actually stories in different media. Favorite author of mine is Ian McEwan. We read one of his novels in our class, Atonement. And I just finished actually a co-authored project where I wrote some sections on his 2007 novel On Chesil Beach, which is very, very powerful. But.
Okay.
I really love poetry, even though I can't write it. I love Billy Collins and just... all poetry is really...
But how do you... Have you applied any of the stuff out of this class to poetry? Because poetry seems to me to be one of those places where the narrative is not as important as it is in many other places. Mm-hmm. The narrative is... Like, there can be imagistic poetry that's about, let me describe some one perfect moment to you. Right. And how does that figure into your enjoyment of it? Or do you just set it aside?
I haven't... Well, I mean, I think actually Billy Collins usually describes some situations that sometimes are, you know, like I just can think of one poem where he's just like describing like removing parts of his body, you know, like dismembering himself. But so, I mean, I guess... he does describe like not just a scene. He describes more of something that's happening a lot of times. But I don't necessarily apply it to poetry. But now, when I am like, whether it's in our book club that I'm in, or just any narrative that I'm watching on a film or movie or whatever. All of those things are being affected, and I feel like I understand the things better.
So you're asking me to watch tonight with my kids SpongeBob SquarePants
yes.
in a different way.
Right.
Tell me about some of the things that you've done in this paper, or if you could tell me about that stood out to you for the writing. I'm curious about what you're looking for in the classes that you're teaching, and how an instructor... like you, a professor, would define that for students.
Sure. And actually, I think that the Center for Teaching at OSU has been renamed, but it used to be called FCAD,
right,
FTAD,
right.
Faculty Development. And I actually came across a newsletter from them a couple years ago in which they described a class taught by a neuroscientist who wanted to get her students more directly involved in sort of primary research in the field. And this sort of shaped how I approached our class. I tried to make the assignments a kind of simulation of what you'd be doing if you were a professional narrative theorist, if you were specializing in narrative theory as an instructor or researcher in your own right. So I designed the final project, which Dina wrote this for, accordingly. I had them pick a story that they were interested in, try to map some of the tools we've been exploring in our different units onto that story. And I wanted to let their own interests sort of guide them as to what they chose and how they approached it to make the project more meaningful and instructive to them. So I tried to actually design the whole class in that way by having them do digital reading journals where they could try out some of this terminology on examples and explore what the terms would do for them or not. And also with the smaller essay assignments, the same kind of spirit was informing my thinking.
Okay. You know, you mentioned earlier Atonement, which is Ian McEwan was made into a movie,
yes.
Just like this has been made into a movie. And that's, I think, what you're looking at with transmedial narratology. And I'm curious about maybe some of the underpinning things that go from there, because movies are nicely attractive. They're a two and a half hour, maybe three, block of time where you can sit down and look at it and walk your way through it. And most movies, even, you can digest in that amount of time. And I'm curious if you see this as a sort of a hallmark of this kind of theory, that it has a really nice attachment. Did you read the book that this was based on, or did you know?
Not before I wrote the paper.
Okay, but you've gone back now. Okay, so good. And you bought it. No, I'm just kidding.
Supporting.
But tell me about that, the impact of different kinds of media on what you're doing and the kind of writing that goes on.
It's a great question, and you know, that's one of the things about an adaptation of a print text into a film. It does have to be compressed, condensed into a 2 or 3 hour block of time, whereas the story can be much more dilatory and expansive in the print form. So one of the things you are looking at when you're doing the study of narrative across media, or transmedial narrative theory, or transmedial narratology, is to look at the way different media impose constraints as well as provide affordances for storytelling in a given case. So you're talking about one dimension, time, and it really has to be handled differently in a film than it does in a print text or a print narrative. And what you look for in that case would be, well, what has been sacrificed, how has time been rearranged, how have events been rearranged chronologically perhaps to accomplish something like the same effect in a reduced amount of time. You know, is anything been lost? Has anything been gained through this compression? So those are the kinds of questions that looking at narrative across media allow you to ask.
And that's a different sort of question than people often say, oh, the movie was not as good as the book.
Which
is a, sort of a common thing.
Although you could relate the questions, because you could say that, well, too much was compressed, too much had to be sacrificed to fit it into this frame, and that's one reason the impact of the film is not as large as the print version, something like that.
Okay. One last question, well, two final ones. What are the program goals for the Project Narrative Institute that you co-founded at OSU? What are you looking to get out of that, to create because of that?
Well, this is an initiative that started back in 2006, and it arose really because we have in the English department at OSU a kind of critical mass of people interested in narrative theory. And we put our heads together and applied for a grant from OSU, and they allowed us to start the Project Narrative Initiative. And we view it really as a kind of hub that connects together people from different fields working on issues of narrative, broadly defined. So we have, I think, faculty from something like 25 different departments, and grad students from other departments as well. And so they encompass foreign languages, history, philosophy, linguistics. So we think of it as a kind of way to promote narrative studies in an interdisciplinary way, and in a way that promotes thinking about stories in this broad transmedial sense. So if somebody's interested in visual narratives or graphic narratives or films or face-to-face storytelling, all those can be accommodated along with literature and print forms.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. Well, I want to thank both of you for coming today.
For more from my guests, Dina Galley and David Herman, visit www.writerstalk.org. Writers Talk is a co-production of the Center for the Study and Teaching of Writing at The Ohio State University and The Ohio Channel. You can watch our interviews at www.ohiochannel.org or by checking your local television listings. Join us next time for another OSU person from the English Department at The Ohio State University, Professor Michelle Herman.
Tell me about the intersection for you between fiction and nonfiction. When do you decide when it's fiction, whether it's nonfiction?
Yeah, you know, I used to ask that question a lot myself of people who wrote both, and I never understood why they couldn't give me a good answer. And okay. Now I have joined their ranks. Because the answer is so abstract, I really never think, oh, should this be fiction or should it be nonfiction? Mm-hmm. And I'm only half joking when I say that the character in Dog is nothing like me. I think of Dog as the there but for the grace of God version of my life. The character and I have certain things in common. I've given her certain bits and pieces of my childhood, certain teachers. She grew up in New York City too, although in a different part of New York. If you're from New York, the idea of Brooklyn versus Flushing is like, you know, the difference between Oklahoma and Texas, let's say, if you're from that part of the country. But she's a middle-aged woman who's a writer and teaches in a large, unnamed Midwestern university who never married, never had children, and whose life is devoted to her dog, which could easily have happened to me. But in fact, that is not the path my life took. So it wasn't as if I thought, oh, am I going to write a story about me and my dog? Mm-hmm. It was a moment where I thought, oh, what would it be like if I had gone this way rather than this way? And that's often where fiction begins for me, is what would it be like if? Mm-hmm. Whether it starts with someone like me or someone completely different from me.
That's Michelle Herman, next time on OSU's Writers Talk. Until then, this is Doug Dangler from The Ohio State University saying, keep writing.